You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. My next guest does not know how to be lazy, and I say that in the nicest possible way. She blogs for Huffington Post and is deputy editor of the topical website The New Establishment. She's been heard on BBC Ouch, BBC Five Live, BBC Radio 4 and Channel 5. She's been shortlisted for BBC Writers' Room Comedy, and she is the star of two one-woman shows, A Poke in the Eye and The Moral High Ground, which are both playing in selected theatres this month. I'm talking, of course, about the very wonderful and the very funny Georgie Morell. Georgie, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
It's very nice to speak to you again, Georgie. We met each other at the Edinburgh Festival this year.
We did. I think you got me in the third week when I was really hanging.
But you came with so much vibrance and so much excitement. It was an absolute pleasure to speak to you. I knew I was going to have to get you on the show at one point. So I'm very glad that we've been able to work it out today.
Oh, terrific. Thank you.
Now, your four-star first show, A Poke in the Eye, is returning. More on that a little later. But start by telling us a little bit about your new show, The Moral High Ground, or The Morell High Ground. Maybe you should start by telling us how to pronounce it.
Do you know, I think my name's actually pronounced Morell, but so many people pronounce it Moral. And I don't know, I think Moral's funnier. Better is I haven't got any. I don't know. There's something there. There's a play on words.
But certainly works for the title.
I wrote that, I was still writing it when it was in Edinburgh, really. It was, it developed most of all up there. It's, so Poking Eye focuses on a particular year of my life when I lost my sight. And then Moral High Ground is sort of everything either side of it, because I've been visually impaired since I was three. So it's trying to cram sort of 27 years of stories about disability and sight loss into an hour. And because of how things have been the last couple of months, it's not news to anyone that there are big changes in the benefit system. Disability living allowance springs to mind, and the NHS. And I wanted it to reflect on those as well. It is a comedy.
It is. It definitely is. But we'll get to some of the changes and the sort of the moral focus of The Morell High Ground in a little bit. But I wanted to bring you up on a point there. Now, when you brought your first show to the Edinburgh Fringe in 2016, that was already fully formed and you'd performed it a few times before you came up. Now, like many acts at the festival, you used your run of The Morell High Ground this year to refine your show, building on things that worked and trimming out the parts that didn't. How did your two experiences of The Fringe compare?
Oh, they're completely different. 2016 it was a riot, really. I had the show there. I had nothing to lose either. I was a complete unknown, so I could sort of just go for it and relax into it. And I had a terrific time, and I saw a lot as well. I really got everything I could out of The Fringe. But this year, taking two shows up limited my time. And then when I wasn't doing the shows, I had to tweak The Moral High Ground and get that right. So it was a far more, professional years. I really was just working all of the time.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, you were having a blast in 2016, but this year you were working so hard. You could see it, not during the performance, you didn't give anything away, but afterwards, when I was chatting to you afterwards, just see, my, this girl's doing far too much.
Yeah, it was etched all over my face. It really was.
As we've mentioned, both A Poke in the Eye and The Moral High Ground go into detail of your eye condition. And without giving too much of what you cover in the show away, can you take us through the experience of losing your sight?
It wouldn't give too much the show away. Obviously it was terrifying. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. I was 21 and I was pretty much living the dream in London. I had a great life. I'd already lost the sight in my left eye, but I think I was quite a naive and immature 21-year-old. I never thought I would lose my sight altogether. So when it did happen, we were surprised because so much work had gone into keeping that eye going. We just didn't think we could be that unlucky. And trying to adapt, and I had to give up my life in London. I had to move back in with my parents. I had to quit my job and start adapting to a whole new way of living. That I probably found the toughest. Anyone who knows me will say I'm pretty independent, a little bit rebellious, to my detriment. So the thought of having to be cared for by my parents and not have all of that freedom probably annoyed me the most. And it was a big grey, literally a grey area, but it was what I call a blind limbo because we didn't know whether I'd get my sight back or not. So it was, do I go ahead and start adapting to being blind and, you know, work my life around that? Because I was determined to still do everything I wanted to, or do we hang on? though that was the toughest thing, is the not knowing.
Absolutely. As you say, the age that you were at, you'd already dealt with losing sight in one eye, and then you were in a situation where you were completely blind, had no idea whether you're coming back from that or not. What was it like then when you were working with the doctors and you started to at least regain some sight in your right eye?
I'm a pretty optimistic person, sort of glass half full, but I never wanted to be too much, just in case. As one of the surgeons who put my eye back together in the end said, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And that's sort of what we did. We were quietly optimistic. And I just had to trust the doctors completely. I just handed myself over to them and went along with everything that they said. And I'm glad I did, because they've pretty much always been right. We're onto something.
Although I'm sure the rebellious nature in you sort of wanted to push back on them in some way.
I'm not going to lie, I was a bit of a nightmare.
Never.
My parents will say, I was a bit of a madam when I was younger, and that has stayed with me. I will get my way one way or another. So when it wasn't happening quick enough for me, that they weren't doing surgery quickly and things weren't happening, I really did throw my toys out the pram. I was quite unpleasant to those wonderful surgeons. They took it on the chin.
That was nice of them.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Now, it's fantastic, obviously, that you have got the sight back in at least one of your eyes. And it's brilliant what you're doing with both A Poke in the Eye and The Moral High Ground, going into such detail about what that struggle was like. But in the show, certainly in The Moral High Ground, you do take a swipe at certain authority figures. As we've mentioned before, you've even had to constantly be updating this show to cover some aspects that so much recent events are affecting. Do you feel the current UK government is doing enough for blind and partially sighted people?
No, I can't bother to be polite about it anymore, to be honest. When Edinburgh was wrapping up, picked up the papers, and obviously the UN had stepped in because our current government wasn't meeting the disabled rights that they'd adhered to with the UN. And, you know, my heart just sank. One, because I'd have to rewrite the show with that in mind, but also that I had worked so hard in trying to raise awareness of something, and then it was just such a kick in the teeth that wasn't happening, not even the basics. And it's only getting worse. I see no improvement. And having been the last 10 years, I've really noticed it, especially after the recession. A lot has changed. And I don't understand why those of us who are registered disabled are having to pay the price. We didn't get the country into this debt, but why are we getting the cuts? Why are we the ones suffering? And it doesn't seem to be changing.
And have you had to go through the PIP assessment yourself?
Oh, I'm on the waiting list, Chris. Well,
it's always excited. Good to be on a waiting list, especially for something as exciting as a PIP assessment.
I know. It's all my birthdays and Christmases roll into one. I got the letter, I think, in January to say I'm on the waiting list to be called in to be reassessed. Friends of mine are being reassessed around me, which is fascinating. It really is. And devastating.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of cracking a little bit of light onto it, but you must be feeling just fed up of it all now.
Yeah, I don't understand it either, which is frustrating. And the PIP, it came in so sneakily. It really did. It proves how clever the current government are, actually, that it just sort of slithered and all of a sudden, oh, we're just changing this, this and this. And then slowly more details come through. And then by the time you've realised, hang on, I'm stuffed here. You've completely changed the assessment process. It's too late. It's very clever. I'll give them that.
It's clever, but it's causing so much devastation for so many people. But I think it's fantastic that with your current show, as much as it must be so exhausting for you, you are updating it all the time to cover what is happening in current events.
Yeah. I mean, the last couple of days alone, I do the Moral High Ground in a couple of weeks, and it's having to have a whole revamp because of just the last month of what's happened. I'd sympathise with any comedian who does satirical humour, because you really do have to work hard for it at the moment. Every day, you just don't know what you're going to read in the paper.
Yeah, it's constantly changing. Now, let's move on to happier things, and let's take it back to the stage. A really fun element of the experience of coming to see a Georgie Morell show is a certain special guest. Tell us a little bit about that.
oh, it's going to get me in trouble, isn't it? It really is. I'm going to get a restraining order. I don't know how it came about when I was working on A Poke in the Eye, but I don't know if you've heard of the male model, Chris, David Gandy. Is that who you're referring to?
Well, I was actually speaking about your parents, but we'll come back to them. Let's get back to David Gandy. I knew I was going to get you into trouble. I hadn't heard of him, but since coming to see your show, I've seen quite a few photos of him.
You get quite the education on him, yeah. And that's really charged. It's because I'm talking about such heavy things. We lighten the show by bringing in a ridiculously hot male model who I pretend is my eye doctor. It's pretty immature. But people, a lot of audience members are just like, what the hell is going on? But I'm keeping it in. So yeah, do talk about my parents. They're far more interesting.
Right. Well, we'll move on to your parents to avoid you any further embarrassment. They do pop up throughout the Moral High Ground to give their take on the events of your life. How did they feel about being involved?
I'll be honest with you. I was sneaky about it. I sort of mentioned it to them because I was half thinking about the idea, and they're actually in both shows. Their voiceover comes in and they help me tell the stories. I just sat them down one day and put them on record and said, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about that year I couldn't see, and just answer them as honestly as you can, and I might put it into the show. And they were very apprehensive at first, my mum and dad. We don't really talk about that year, not because we don't want to or need to or any sort of repression. It's just we lived it. It happened. It's very everyday for us. But as soon as they got going, I couldn't shut them up. And they said the most extraordinary things. Obviously, it affected me going blind, literally. But I think the impact on them was far greater. They couldn't do anything but look after me and stay incredibly optimistic. Dad has seen A Poke in the Eye with him, and they're both coming to see a show in a couple of weeks, and they will hear themselves and see pictures of themselves. So, I'll tell you in a couple of weeks what they really think.
It is a real highlight of the show, and there's moments it is, you know, a lump in the throat time when your parents are chatting about that year. And, I mean, you've said that you guys don't really talk about that year where you completely lost your sight. But in all honesty, no one ever really sits down and asks their parents to comment on how they've raised you and what moments in the family history have been. So I think it's brilliant that you've sat them down and you've got them on record. But did you discover any surprises when you were chatting to them?
Yes. I recall when we were talking about it, having to stop the recording because my dad was a bit choked up. He hadn't said some of this or really thought about it in a long time. That threw me. You know, it's my dad. My mum as well, she's an incredibly practical woman, very straight talking. And I wanted them to answer things honestly. And yeah, a few things she said. When I was younger, she was my main carer when I was in and out of hospital and dad was working. And I openly said to her, I said, did you ever resent me? And she said, well, yes, but not for long. And it was purely, it wasn't personally, resenting me. It was more the situation because it was just relentless sometimes. We'd have one surgery, think everything was okay, and then it wasn't. And she just wanted a bit of respite. But I never noticed that when we were younger. They, if anything, made what should have been the most difficult experience of my life some of the funniest, and they brought such optimism to it as well. They never showed how scared they were.
I think it's a real testament to your relationship with your folks, and you go into it in the show about just how close you are, but the fact that they can be so honest with you now about it all, as much as they'd shielded you from a lot of what they were going through at the time, it's great that they can be so honest with you now.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. We're very, very close to my mum and dad, and I think I talked about this at a gig once. There's something about having a disability or a health issue and going through it with your parents where you just have a bond like I haven't seen in any of my sort of mates and their parents. There's just something that connects you. It's something almost I don't think anyone, any sort of like boyfriend or partner can quite understand. And it's sort of all unsaid. When your mum gives you a bath at 21 when you're blind and your dad guides you around to Tesco and, you know, they're with you as soon as you come out from a surgery. Yeah, it's extraordinary, and it feels like a privilege. I feel very lucky.
The fact that you've included them in the show, I'm glad that we're shining a spotlight on the folks in the show as well. Now, for a one-woman show, you do actually feature quite a lot of cameos, including some government officials, but more importantly, the five doctors who have been a part of your sight loss journey. How important was it for you to mention them?
Oh, it was vital. They are the supporting cast of my life. Without them, without featuring them in the show, it wouldn't be a story. Some of them I owe a great deal. And I mean, one doctor I talk about, he treated me for 19 years and I would see him every couple of months. And the extraordinary lengths that they went to, I had to honor them. But it was also, the reason I really did it as well was to honor the NHS. All of the treatment I had, every one of those doctors was on the NHS. And at the moment it is underfunded and it's not in the best way. And if I can personalize it with these individuals, people see the importance of it, the lengths that they went to.
And you do, you really, really do personalize and make the doctors a real presence in the show. But you do something quite sneaky with that as well. I hope it's not giving too much spoilers away, but you make them all doctors we can relate to. Can you tell our listeners how you achieve that?
Obviously, I couldn't use pictures of them for privacy reasons. So I turned one of them into George Clooney from ER. Another ER doctor, I think. Dr. House was in there, someone from Grey's Anatomy. To be fair, that's me trying to lighten it again and have a bit of fun, because the subject matter is pretty heavy for people. I forget that when I'm doing it. So the moment I'm just making that a little bit more accessible is really, really important to the show, for people to be able to sit through it.
Absolutely. And the show is very, very funny. It does provoke a little rage against the system, but that's fine. But above all, it has so much heart. What else can we say to inspire our listeners to come see The Moral High Ground or A Poke in the Eye?
Gosh, that is a big question. I think if you're unhappy with the way that things are, come along and see it. But also, if you actually think everything's okay and there are no problems, please come and see it. It's one thing for me to, you know, preach the converted. That's fine, and you know, you get great response from audience, but it's actually those who are in agreement with our current government that need to come and see it. With A Poke in the Eye, that doesn't go into the politics so much. I want people to see that, to start understanding disability, because those who aren't disabled, if they do, then they won't be so keen for these cuts to go through and the underfunding to the NHS. Just want people to empathise a bit, really.
Absolutely. And, well, Georgie, we mentioned it before, but you do have a very busy couple of months in store. If our listeners do want to catch you in a show, where and when are you playing?
I am on the 17th of October at the Phoenix Artist Club with A Poke in the Eye. That's in London at 7 o'clock. You can get tickets online. Poke in the Eye won't be in London for a long time after that. And then the 19th of October, I'm at the Star of Kings with The Moral High Ground. And that will definitely come along to that, because that is rewritten in light of recent events. So that will be interesting.
Absolutely. And if our listeners want to find out more about you, your performances, or even to follow you on Twitter, where can they go?
On Twitter, I'm Georgie Pokeye. Come and say hello. My website is georgiemorel.co.uk. And also on the 4th of November, tune into BBC Radio 4, because I'm in the black comedy thriller Jane Lake. That is also about blindness as well.
Georgie Morell, director, writer and star of A Poke in the Eye and The Moral High Ground and Huffington Post and Channel 5 and everything else. Thank you so much for joining me today.
No, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio.